You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome back to Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and post-game commentary on the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. If you stay tuned to me on Twitter over at Ben Dubose, you probably saw a tweet from me earlier today saying that there would most likely not be a Locked On Rockets show today. I've been a bit under the weather of late. Well, folks, bad news, or good news, depending on how you look at it, I lied. There is going to be a show. We're doing it right now because of breaking news from Brian Windhorst of ESPN, who says, quote, word on the street is that a deal could be lined up between veteran swingman Joe Johnson and the Houston Rockets. Joe Johnson, of course, at Thursday's trade deadline, was sent from the Utah Jazz to the Sacramento Kings as part of the convoluted trade package also involving the Cleveland Cavaliers. Ultimately, the Jazz brought in Jay Crowder. They sent out Rodney Hood, who's still on his rookie contract. And to make the math work, they had to send out a larger salary to meet the collective bargaining agreement rules, and they had to find a third team to take that salary since the Cavs were wanting George Hill, who has a massive salary, and the Kings were that third team. Ultimately, though, Joe Johnson, at 36 years old, not at all a fit for the Kings at this stage in his career, and he's a classic buyout candidate, and thankfully it seems that the Kings are willing to play ball on that. That is not finalized at this point. That's why I don't think any announcement is imminent. We'll get to that throughout the program, but it does sound like that there's some traction between Joe and the Rockets. Now, this news was first reported, mutual interest between the Rockets and Joe, over a week ago by CyberX over at Clutch Fan, so let's give him his due. But beyond that, this week, certainly David Aldridge of NBA.com and TNT, he reported yesterday that the Rockets were very interested in Joe, and now that seems to be confirmed by Brian Windhorst. What we did not know was whether the interest was reciprocal. Now, there's reason to think that Joe could be interested because some of the best years of Joe's career, he played under Mike D'Antoni for four seasons in Phoenix in the initial days of that Steve Nash, Amari Stoudemire run-and-gun offense, and Joe flourished there. So they have always been on good terms. There's reason to think that he could be interested. But folks, Joe Johnson, a quality player who over his career is an over 16 points per game scorer, 4 rebounds, 4 assists per game, and even last year in the playoffs, we're less than 1 year removed from in the first round when against the Clippers, a 7-game grueling series, he averaged 16 points a game, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, including a buzzer beater to win one of those games in a 7-game series that the Jazz ultimately won, sending them to the second round where they bat out against the Warriors the way, well, pretty much everyone does. But the point is, Joe Johnson, it hasn't been a banner year for Joe to this point in 2017-2018, 7.3 points per game in 21 minutes per game, 32 games played. There's some extenuating circumstances with those numbers, which I will get to over the next few minutes. But to start off by briefing you guys of the overall situation, it's not so much a matter of are the Rockets interested in Joe Johnson. Yes, we've reported for a while that the Rockets are targeting the buyout market, and he's the kind of veteran player and experience in D'Antoni's system that makes a lot of sense here. The question is the Rockets limited to the veteran minimum contract and that they're already 9 deep, maybe 10 deep if you include Joel Green in their rotation, can they appeal to someone like that? And since yesterday's deadline, we've also heard reports that Golden State, Boston, and Oklahoma City also have interest in Joe. So the fact that the Rockets are interested in him, that wasn't news. The question is the interest reciprocated? And according to Brian Windhorst of ESPN, that appears to be the case, saying a deal appears to be lined up. And initially, while I was aware of the possibility, I had not talked too much about Joe on this show for a couple of reasons. One, my skepticism that he would choose the Rockets based on how deep the rotation is already. And two, the fact that just superficially, when you look at his numbers, again, 7.3 points per game this season, a 9.3 player efficiency rating, shooting just 27% from behind the arc. And on paper, he profiles as a guy who's a big name, but may not be that much of a difference maker anymore on the floor. In other words, you're paying more for the name than you are for the production. So while it seemed reasonable, he wasn't a guy who just jumped out at you from an eye-popping perspective the way, say, a Tyson Chandler might, or Brook Lopez if he were to get cut loose, or any of the other names that we've talked about in recent days. Now, before we get into too much about Joe Johnson, the basketball player, I do want to take a step back and point out that I don't think you're going to see imminently this weekend a deal reach, because there's a couple of things that have to happen. First, there is a negotiation exactly what payment he's going to get from the Sacramento Kings. So there's a bit of a negotiation there as far as his existing contract. And then once that agreement is reached, he would have to pass through waivers. Now, it's almost certain, in fact, it may not even be mathematically possible for him to be claimed on waivers, because there are only a few teams that have the requisite cap room, period. Joe Johnson's salary at the moment is over $10.5 million for this season, the final year of his contract. And I'm not sure if any NBA team even has that much space. But the point is, even if they do, the types of teams that have space are the teams that are not very good, so they are not going to claim that contract. It's just merely a formality. However, typically, you don't hear it's just bad form in the agent community with the players, an agreement with a new team struck before A, the buyout agreement is finalized, and B, the player formally passes through waivers. Now, again, it's a formality, but that process will probably take a few days. I would say maybe later today or this weekend you'll get news that, yes, the Kings and Joe have come to terms on a buyout. And then from there, I believe it's 24 or 48 hours. I don't have it right in front of me right now, the league rules. But the point is, the earliest he would actually pass through waivers would probably be Monday or Tuesday of next week, and that's if everything goes smoothly this weekend. And I don't think you'll have a commitment of where he's going to go until after that, in terms of actually his agent leaking to the NBA media community that Joe has made a decision. Nonetheless, there are certainly informal conversations going on before then, and it's sort of similar to a few years ago when the Rockets picked up Josh Smith after he was shockingly released by the Pistons. They had to go through the formal process, and it wasn't until Christmas Eve before that deal through Woj was actually leaked in terms of the verbal agreement. But you had heard for 2 to 3 days before that there were very strong momentum between Josh and the Rockets. And I think starting with that Brian Windhorst video, which was from ESPN's NBA The Jump show this afternoon, I retweeted it on my timeline, I think that's where we're at. I don't think this thing is done. I'm sure there are other teams. We mentioned Golden State, Boston, who else am I forgetting? Oklahoma City, potentially in the mix. And I think that's why the Rockets, they have to do their diligence on due diligence on other free agents as well. We heard that they're also in the running for Tony Allen, so is Oklahoma City. So I don't think either side is assuming that this is done, and certainly other teams are going to continue to make their pitch. But there is history between Joe Johnson and Mike D'Antoni. There's reason to believe that the Rockets would be after him because, again, say what you will about his performance this year, we were less than a year removed from when he was a true difference maker in a playoff series. So I would say it's not been so much a question for me of whether the Rockets would want Joe, but whether that interest would be reciprocal. And now there appears to be evidence that it is. So I definitely would say stay tuned. And I would say after hearing the rumor this afternoon, I decided to take a deeper look at his numbers. And actually, I'm more encouraged than I was before. Now, I would have taken the gamble on Joe before because he's a guy we mentioned less than a year removed from being a difference maker in a playoff series, put him in a situation where the team is better in a winning clubhouse. There's less negativity. Certainly the Jazz this year have not been an ideal situation, although they played a lot better of late since losing Gordon Hayward in the offseason. Even though they're back in the playoff picture, they're nowhere near the 50-win team that got to the second round last year. They certainly took a hit in terms of their overall talent, in terms of the looks that someone like Joe Johnson might get. And beyond that, I would just say for a veteran like Joe, you go from a season in which, other than the Warriors, they could be competitive with anybody last year, the Jazz, and you go from that to a team that has been in the 9-10 spot in the West most of this year and is now scrapping and clawing just to try and get in the top eight, you could see a lapse in intensity. And before I looked at the numbers, I thought, well, maybe he's a candidate to bounce back if he gets back to the right situation. And based on his pedigree, the relationship with D'Antoni, of course the Rockets would take a look. But ultimately, I wasn't that excited. Looking at his numbers, I'm actually a lot more excited. First off, let's discuss the nature of the injury. The overall topical number, 7.3 points per game, 32 games, 22 minutes. First, the 32 games, that's a pretty small sample to begin with. We're looking at a season the Rockets. Ryan Anderson is shooting 38% from three. That's right around his career mark, which is one of the better ones in the NBA, especially for a big, and he's known as an elite shooter. And yet, for 25 games this year, Ryan was shooting 28% from three. So it's not unheard of for even great shooters, and Joe Johnson for his career, an above 37% shooter from behind the arc, widely regarded as one of the league's better shooters for a long time, 44% from the field, it's not unheard of to have a slump over a third of a season. But when you look at the reasons for it and inspect the trend lines a little closer, that's when I get really encouraged. First off, the injury to Joe Johnson, not just any injury, an injury to his shooting wrist. So if you see a decline in the performance of someone in terms of the shooting efficiency, and then you figure out that there's a situation going on with their shooting wrist, yeah, that's a pretty big deal. And he missed 6 weeks on, well, I guess there's no disabled list anymore, but he was out for 6 weeks with the injury, came back on December 15th. Now, there were a few rusty games after he came back, but since December 21st, that's over a month and a half of basketball, 21 games, since December 21st, Joe is shooting 36.2% from behind the arc. That's almost level with his career, 37.2. So you're not looking at someone who is in a shooting funk. This isn't someone who comes in cold and you're hoping can be resurrected by a winning environment or maybe Chris Paul and James Harden get him better looks. No, over his last 21 games, which is a month and a half of basketball, he's shooting just fine, over 44% from the field and over 36% from behind the arc. So it's not like he's coming in cold. He has sorted out those issues. What happened is it's just that his initial 11 games of the year were incredibly bad. His initial 11 games from October 18th through December 20th, and most of those were at the very beginning of the season, it was the very beginning before the injury, and then his first four games off the shelf, in which there's probably a lot of rust to be knocked off and getting back into the rhythm. In those 11 games, he shot just 7.7% from three. Other than that, he's been right at his career average. So I'm encouraged that it's not like he's in a slump now. It's not like this has been ongoing. This was early in the season. It's over with for over double the time period. That's 11 games. The 21 games that he's been at 36% is basically double the time frame. He's been better. He is trending well. He's been consistent. And those first 11 games, there's a pretty clear injury cause and effect for it when you're talking about his shooting wrist. So the numbers are explainable. The other thing I would point out, when a player ages, which Joe, being in his 17th NBA season, 36 years old, I get the concerns. But typically, a player's three-point shot is not the first thing that goes. The first thing that usually goes, what you'll see is a player that stops driving the ball as much. If anything, might rely on their three-point stroke too much. And eventually, while I don't know that the stroke necessarily goes, what may happen, they rely on their three-point shot to where the volume skews up, and also they become more predictable. And so by virtue of higher volume and becoming more predictable, the three-point stroke often eventually declines as well. But the first telltale sign you see of a guy who's losing his athleticism, who is not athletic enough to be a difference maker anymore, they stop taking as many twos and they stop being as efficient on drives as they used to be. Well, folks, per 100 possessions, Joe Johnson is shooting 10.2 two-pointers per game. That's almost identical to the 10.5 he shot a year ago with the Jazz. Pretty much flat. And the year before that, he was at 10.2. So basically, for the last 3 years running, 10.2, 10.5, 10.2. He's still taking the same amount of twos in terms of the percentages. He's actually better. 2 years ago on twos, he was 47.1%. Last year, he was 45.4. This year, he's 50.7% on the twos. So that tells me you're not seeing a Joe Johnson that's just retreating into shooter mode. He is still driving and attacking. He can be a post player. He's more versatile than being just a shooter. He's still the guy he's been. I don't want to say he's at his peak form. There's certainly been some decline in athleticism relative to the guy he was in Phoenix and Atlanta in the early stages of his career. But in terms of the player, the quality role player he's been for a few years now, when you actually dive into his numbers, you don't really see that. He's still driving the ball as much. He's still taking as many twos. He's actually a little bit more efficient on those twos. It's just that the three-point percentage fell off the charts for 11 games, and those 11 games coincided perfectly when he had a six-week injury with his shooting wrist. So when you consider that, and then you look at the fact that over the last 21 games, again, a month and a half, he's basically been the same old Joe, 44% from the field, 36% from three, and that's all on a Jazz team that doesn't even have Gordon Hayward anymore, And then you look at those numbers and then extrapolate them to a situation in Houston when he would get better looks playing alongside Chris Paul and James Harden, possibly the rejuvenation bonus of being of going from a team that's just hoping for a playoff spot to a team that can legitimately win a championship. And all of a sudden, Joe Johnson, after I've looked at those numbers, I'm excited. Now, I don't think the deal is done. Certainly, a lot of other teams probably realize these numbers as well, and he's going to get a lot of calls. Again, Warriors, Celtics, Thunder, those are other teams that are reported to be in on him. But after looking at that data, I'm less looking at Joe as just kind of a flyer, a project in which you bring in a big name and you hope that the culture turns him around, and more to a guy who looks genuinely like a quality rotation player already, and maybe the culture, if anything, takes him from being a bad player. I think before, maybe the culture takes him being a bad player to a passable rotation one. Well, all of a sudden, maybe the culture, the winning factors take him from what's already been, for the past month and a half, a pretty quality, steady rotation player, and elevates it to a guy who can be a legitimately good one. So for those of you who just look at his season-long numbers, again, I urge you to break down the numbers a little further. Look at the trend lines, and I think you'll be a little more excited about Joe Johnson, the basketball player. Now that's part one. I want to talk about Joe Johnson, the basketball player, and why the Rockets are interested in him. Second part of the show, I want to discuss where he would fit with the Rockets and why it does make sense, even if on paper he's a swing man, and that's a spot where between James Harden, Eric Gordon, Trevor Ariza, Luke Bamute, Gerald Green, you could even throw P.J. Tucker in there, you would seem to have a lot of depth. And on paper, a lot of folks have said, well, do you want either a fourth guard or do you want a third center for that buyout spot? And at first glance, this is not one of those spots, and so I can understand the confusion from a fit perspective. But big picture, think back to the conversation that we had on this show with Craig Ackerman, lead play-by-play broadcaster, earlier this week, who said it came down to three words, the buyout strategy: best player available. And those are three words that have been synonymous with Daryl Morey's entire tenure in Houston. It's not about fit so much as it's about getting the best talent, and you worry about making the fit work later. That's what you have to do in this NBA of the Golden State Warriors in this era that we're in. And when you look at the Rockets, first off, for them to have a chance to win in the postseason against the Warriors, you're going to have to assume health. But if they're healthy, they are 9-10 deep. So if you add another center, you add another point guard, a depth guy to one of those spots, it's not like they're going to be playing anyway in games that matter. Sure, it might help you a little bit down the home stretch of the year, and the Rockets could potentially add a second buyout, even if they get Joe Johnson. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But as far as actually making a difference to you as a playoff heavyweight, I don't think just bringing in a depth guy to fill one of these spots is the way to do that. I think the way that you should address that is to actually look at where are potential weak spots in the team, and is there a way that under certain circumstances you can improve those? And when it comes to the Rockets, aside from the injuries, they have not had very many slumps this year, 40-13 going into Friday night's game against the Nuggets. That's obvious. But excluding injuries, you ask yourself, where have there been issues with this team? And there are two names that I keep coming back to. Now, both have played a little better of late, but the two names that, excluding injuries, have been a disappointment for certain stretches of this year have been Ryan Anderson and P.J. Tucker. We've mentioned that for about 20 games for both of them, from early December until early January, they each won at least 20 games, which they shot about 35% from the field and below 30% from three, which simply is not good enough in this offense. Now, both have kind of sprung back to life lately, and I think P.J. has shown you enough. Also, for those worried about the third center spot, keep in mind that at least in the Warriors matchup, which is probably the most impactful and important playoff matchup of all, they plan on P.J. Tucker filling some of those center minutes, so it's not just Clint Capela and Nene. They plan on P.J. Tucker being in their five rotation as well, so maybe that's another reason why a third center is not quite as important to the Rockets. But folks, when you look at them over the course of this season, the two names that you say that at times have disappointed you are Ryan and P.J., just because the shooting has not been there enough. You also have to wonder, there's some mileage on both of those legs. And if there's one area that you would like to address, I think it's to get more of a hedge for one or both of those guys. Now, Gerald Green, we've mentioned in the past, his potential to do that. But there's a couple of things with Gerald Green. First, Gerald's value is almost exclusively as a shooter, which means if he's making his threes, great. But if he's not, and he went through a six-game stretch in which he was shooting 22% from three, then Gerald is not that valuable either. So, in some ways, even though Gerald's a hedge, he's sort of a risky hedge himself, in that it's not necessarily true that Gerald's going to come in and provide what you need or want. And then beyond that, even if Gerald is hitting a respectable percentage from three, well, all of a sudden, let's say Ryan and or PJ, one of those guys isn't producing, and so you give 4 minutes to Gerald Green, you play Gerald at the three, and then Trevor Ariza or Luke Bamute at the four. Where Gerald Green compared to Ariza, and then Ariza compared to Ryan and especially PJ, while I think, again, the Rockets do want to play fast if possible, there is a little bit of loss of physicality there. Joe Johnson helps you because, yes, over his career, he is a very good shooter. But beyond that, he is a physical body. He can play in the post. He also kind of plays into your theme of a more diverse offense. He's got a little bit of a mid-range game back to the basket, which I think just the same way that Chris Paul has given them more diversity, potentially Joe Johnson could as well. But the point is, whereas Gerald is a bit of a one-trick pony and it comes down to how well he's shooting in a given game, Joe's game is more diverse. He can give you some of that physicality, even as a small ball power forward. Keep in mind, Joe Johnson is 6'7", 240 pounds. This is a big guy. And so he's someone that if Ryan Anderson or PJ Tucker gets into a funk, he can potentially eat some of those minutes to where you're not just dependent on Gerald Green and whether he's hot at a given time. And B, stylistically, Joe can give you some of that physicality that you expect someone like Ryan or PJ that can throw his body around near the bucket. Gerald's just not going to be able to do that. You're going to be playing small ball, which, again, the Rockets are comfortable playing small, but you want as many options as you can. Joe gives you more options, and so that's where I see it as a fit. Even though, again, he's not a guard, and you say, well, who's the backup point guard? If Eric Gordon, he's had some nagging injuries of late, so is Trevor Ariza, Nene is playing now, but he's had injuries of late, and so is Ryan Anderson. So he doesn't fit any one individual need in terms of the short term. But big picture, I think more than any short-term need, if you could do anything with buyouts, you would love to get a player who could conceivably upgrade your actual rotation. There are scenarios where Joe could do that. Now, I don't think it's going to be guaranteed, and maybe that's why the Rockets don't get him, because I'm sure other teams will pitch him on a guaranteed role. The Rockets, if you include Gerald Green, they are 10 deep when healthy, and so it'll be a dogfight for those minutes. I don't think the Rockets can say 100%, Joe, you're going to get X role, you're going to get X minutes. No, it'll be a dogfight. But if you can get him, there is potential there to actually upgrade your playoff team, because if Ryan or PJ goes into the funk that they were in from early to mid-December until early January, then yes, there are nights, in my opinion, that Joe Johnson would be better than those guys. And so that's why it might make more sense than bringing in a third center or another point guard who gives you more depth in the regular season, but truth be told, in the playoffs, barring a ton of injuries, is probably not going to play there because all your center spot minutes are going to be spoken for mostly by Clint Capella, and Nene, your primary backup, and then a few minutes from PJ Tucker in the Tuck Wagon lineups. And then at point guard, you're hoping that all 48 minutes are covered by Chris Paul and James Harden. Now, I'm not saying those needs aren't important. Ultimately, the Rockets could still address those. But in the playoffs, the point is, I don't think either of those spots really plays for you. This Joe Johnson one, if he pans out, if his play over the last 6 weeks is sustainable, and I think it is, then there could be nights where he is better than Ryan or PJ or Gerald Green. Now, certainly it's a delicate balancing act, because if they add Joe Johnson, those are going to be at least 11 players on that roster that every night feel like they need minutes. And can Mike D'Antoni keep them all in alignment in terms of their focus, even if a couple of those guys don't play for a few games? Can he give all of them enough minutes? And of course, in the regular season, down the home stretch, you can give occasional guys maintenance nights. But can he give them all enough minutes to where they each stay fresh and in somewhat of a groove so that if their number is called in the playoffs, they're ready to go? It'll be a challenge. But ultimately, I think it's one that the upside is there, because with Joe Johnson, when he is at his best, and again, we mentioned we're less than a year removed from when he scored 16 points a game against the Clippers in the playoffs, a series the Jazz won 4-3, and one of the four wins was on a buzzer beater from Joe Johnson. There are paths where you can see Joe Johnson as a better player than Ryan Anderson or Gerald Green, and maybe even PJ Tucker, depending on exactly where his shot is and whether his defense continues to be as good as it's been of late. Because PJ's been much better defensively, I think, over the last 2 to 3 weeks. The 4 or 5 weeks prior to that, not so much. Hopefully PJ, with the rotation deeper than it's been in a while, and also getting towards the home stretch of the year in the playoffs. Hopefully PJ, a veteran, this is just proof of him rounding into form. But the point is, while we've said in the past that Gerald Green is sort of the hedge for some of those issues, and he still can be, Gerald Green is not necessarily the ideal hedge because his game is so dependent on the threes, and there's always a little bit of volatility with that. Joe Johnson is a little bit more diverse, steadier as a scorer, as an overall player. And while it's still nice that you have Gerald, if you can add Joe as well, that's a spot where you could actually upgrade your playoff rotation. I don't know exactly who it would be, and some of it's just going to depend on who's hot at the right time and who's cold at the wrong time. But there's a path there to where he could, and so that's why it makes sense, even if he's not a center, even if he's not a point guard, to where I think that Joe Johnson makes sense for the Rockets, and that's why I think he's at the top of their list. The good news, by the way, if you also say, well, the regular season does matter. You want the number one seed, and right now, Eric Gordon, Trevor Ariza, Ryan Anderson, you've got all these injuries. What about that point guard spot? What about the center spot? One clarification I'm happy to make. I spoke with David Weiner, amateur Rockets capologist. You know him as Beam of Thog on Twitter. Brilliant guy. Before yesterday's deadline, the Rockets did, reports out there, they looked to make minor moves, ultimately didn't strike any. But the deals I suspected were Tarik Black, Troy Williams, maybe Shinanu Anuaku, guys who are not playing now, but are players who, well, you would certainly need the roster spot. The Rockets only have one open roster spot, which they could presumably use for Joe Johnson. But beyond that, those other guys, they're not playing. So in addition to being able to use them to free up a roster spot, if you had traded them, then you could have, besides opening up a roster spot, saved some in terms of sending their salary to another team, because if you cut them, you're still going to be on the hook for their salary. And my fear was that if the Rockets were... My fear was that if the Rockets did not make a trade by 2 p.m. Thursday, that it would probably signal that they weren't going after more than one buyout candidate, because I wasn't sure if they would have enough money under the tax line if they were still paying for, say, Troy Williams, Tarik Black, whoever they cut to open up a spot later, Shinanu Anuaku, and add a second minimum. And as we've said plenty of times, it's imperative for the Rockets that they do not cross the luxury tax line this year, because they don't want to be subject to repeater tax penalties in the years ahead. And we expect them for the foreseeable future, once they re-sign Chris Paul, Trevor Ariza, Clint Capella, all expected to get raises, potentially go after LeBron James as well, you're going to be looking at a team with a very, very high payroll in the years ahead. And so you don't want to spend this year as a tax team, even if it's by $1, even if it's by a minuscule amount, it won't be a minuscule amount down the road, and it could potentially compromise your moves. So the Rockets don't want to be a tax team. And my thought was that, well, if you're going to go after two buyout candidates, you would probably see a minor move yesterday. Well, courtesy of David Weiner, what I have learned is that it's close, but there is room for the Rockets to later cut one of these guys, sign a second buyout candidate to a veteran's minimum contract, and they would still be below the tax line. So even if the Rockets get Joe Johnson, that's not necessarily it. You could still add a point guard or a center later. So this does not have to be it. For those of you saying, well, Eric Gordon, Trevor Ariza, Ryan Anderson, there's all these injuries now. How do you address the depth in the short term? You can do that. It's not like Joe Johnson is the only move. There is a path, even after not moving those guys to the trade deadline, you could cut them at a later date and still be able to sign a second bought out player to a veteran minimum contract and not go to the tax line. So that's another reason why I'm more bullish on the Joe possibility. I was a little down yesterday because after not making the move, I thought the Rockets might have to be very, very choosy in terms of what exactly the right fit is, the timetable, making sure they know the entire market. Because if they can only get one, you have to make sure that you get it right. Well, now there's a little more flexibility than I thought. So you could potentially sign Joe Johnson and still add another piece later, which in my opinion is a big deal. You could also actually argue that with the short-term injury factors, such as Eric, Ryan, Trevor, the names we've mentioned of late, and the fact, as we said earlier, that because of the reality that Joe Johnson and any bought-out candidate, first they have to reach a buyout agreement. There's a negotiation process there with the team they're being bought out from. Then they have to go through waivers. You're not going to be able to sign them until at the earliest, probably Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of next week. Well, folks, starting tonight, the Rockets have four games in the next 6 days. Friday, Sunday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. So it may not be that good of an idea, period, to, say, cut a guy like Tarik Black, who is on or trade, for example, yesterday. That could have been a small part of the calculation as well, that you have a back-to-back next week, you have all these games, and if the buyouts are not going to be ready for, you know, at least a week anyway, then why trade one of those guys now and further compromise yourself in the short term, because your buyouts are not going to be eligible to join your team probably until that 8-day off period during the All-Star break anyway, in terms of actually finalizing the buyout, passing through waivers, verbally agreeing to a deal, signing the deal, going through a physical, and then ideally going through a practice or two before joining a team. Reality is probably not going to be until the Friday after the All-Star break when you get back in action that you're going to have Joe Johnson or any bought-out player you add available. So maybe that's another small reason why the Rockets did not make a minor move yesterday, such as trading Tarik Black, Troy Williams, Shinanu Anuaku for a roster spot. Bottom line, though, again, after talking with David, it is possible that the Rockets, after, even if they were to able to add Joe Johnson, which seems to be the plan right now, and it's, again, is not a done deal, there's going to be other teams after him, very good teams, Golden State, Boston, and Oklahoma City among them, but even if that deal is struck, they could still cut someone else at a later date to free up another roster spot and sign another player to a minimum contract without being to the tax line. So even if you have some hesitation on Joe Johnson for fit reasons or any other reason, then this is not necessarily it. You could still address other positions, other needs at a later date. Final thought before I close off. Folks, just realize what it says about the Rockets for them to be in this position to land a guy like Joe Johnson, because they don't have the most money. They certainly don't have a clear pathway to minutes. Yet, even with other teams, very good ones, Golden State, Boston, Oklahoma City being in the mix, the Rockets right now, according to Brian Windhorst, appear to be the front runner. And I think that speaks strongly to the culture that's in Houston. It speaks to how well the Rockets are respected around the league. Certainly, it speaks to the relationship between Joe Johnson and Mike D'Antoni, who said for a long time, Mike D'Antoni is a player's coach. People around the NBA love him. And yeah, you better believe that will be a factor this summer for LeBron James as well, who, according to Bovada and a couple other Vegas sites today, the Rockets are the favorites for LeBron James, which I would largely agree with. So there's a lot of things that Joe Johnson, a guy of that stature who has options, if he picks the Rockets, then yeah, it's a good reflection of this team and what they've done this year. And again, I thought it all along, I was that the Rockets were going to be of that stature. I wasn't sold about Joe specifically, his situation, and also Joe the basketball player. But folks, after doing some digging this afternoon, besides just the fit with the Rockets, what they need, I think Joe the basketball player is better than his overall numbers would suggest as well. So after doing a little bit of homework, folks, I'm all in. I hope the Rockets can close this deal, because I think Joe Johnson would add a lot to your team down the stretch of this year. Not exactly sure what his role would be, but yeah, there's some very real upside there. And hopefully, keep your eyes peeled to Twitter in the next few days. Hopefully the Rockets are able to close this up. So with that said, on the theme of closing up, I will close up the podcast here, because I wasn't planning on doing a show at all today. I'm a little bit under the weather, but folks, when you have breaking news, that's what Locked On Rockets is here for. So I had a lot to discuss, felt good for me to get that off my chest, and hopefully it provided some value to you, our listeners, as well. The Rockets are back in action tonight, home against the Nuggets out at Toyota Center. I won't be there. Again, I'm not quite feeling myself today, but I should be fully healthy by Sunday, I would imagine, when the Rockets are back out there against the Mavs. So I would anticipate, while I won't be there tonight, I will be there on Sunday, so hopefully I will see a few of you guys then. And our usual post-game recap show, I'm going to try and sleep in a little bit tonight, and then hopefully tomorrow we'll have a recap of the Denver game and whatever we take out of it. Again, the Rockets enter 40-13 on the year and winners of 10 of their past 11 games since the return of James Harden, and are now tied with the Golden State Warriors in the loss column for home court advantage throughout the playoffs, best record in the NBA, and of course the Rockets hold the tiebreaker courtesy of beating them 2 out of 3 times. So it's a very good time to be a Houston Rockets fan, and yeah, I thank you for spending some of your Rockets fandom hours on me and us here at Locked On Rockets. If you want even more content from me, the best place to do it is on Twitter. I'm at Ben Dubose, BenDubose. The show is at Locked On Rockets. Also, don't forget our Facebook. That's facebook.com/LockedOnRockets. Our website, that's LockedOnRockets.com. Or our email address, that's LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. Where if you've got questions about the team, suggestions for the show, inquiries about how to advertise with us, please reach out. We'd love to hear from you. We are the only daily podcast covering the Houston Rockets, and the support of advertisers is one of the best ways that we remain financially viable to do this on the daily business model that you have come to know us as. And if you aren't able to advertise, then I strongly urge you, if you haven't already, subscribe to us, leave us 5-star reviews. That's another way you can help us out in terms of being as best viable to advertisers as we possibly can be here at Locked On Rockets and across the Locked On Podcast Network. So for now, I will sign off and get some rest. Hopefully you guys do as well. It's the weekend. Enjoy it. Again, Rockets Nuggets tonight at Toyota Center, and then Rockets Mavs Sunday night at Toyota Center. Hope you guys enjoy the games. I'll be talking about it a little bit on Twitter, and then I would anticipate tomorrow we will have our post-game show from the Denver game and break down whatever we learn as the Rockets play. The Nuggets, a quality playoff team, and one that the Rockets conceivably could play in a 2-7 or 1-8 matchup, so it'll be fun to watch. The Rockets crushed them in November. Somehow I doubt it will be that easy this time. So, there's going to be a lot to discuss. Hopefully the Rockets are a little more rested after having a much-deserved off day yesterday, and we'll see what happens on the court tonight. Until then, though, folks, as always, I'm Ben Dubose. This is Locked On Rockets. Thanks to you guys for listening, and we'll be talking again very soon after tonight's game.